Welcome to Protect, suicide prevention training podcast for healthcare professionals. I'm Manan, consultant psychiatrist, founder, and head of faculty at Progress Guide.
Good day. I'm Mahi, your host. Welcome to a special episode of the Protect podcast on World Suicide Prevention Day 2023. Today, we launch a document, Healing for Healers. As the name suggests, it's about you, health professionals, particularly those who have been working in mental health. But it applies to all, professionals who bring hope and healing to those who are struggling to see the light. But when you are struggling after losing a person you are caring for to suicide, how do you heal? How do you keep alive the flame within yourself? How do you stay connected with hope? But before we dive into healing for healers, let's spend a bit of time catching up. Manan, it's coming up to a year that you've recorded a podcast. What happened?
Well, in September 2022, I went to India and actually lost my streak. I think the last time we did a podcast was 23rd of September 2022. And then amidst the busyness of my day job, private practice, suicide prevention, teaching, training, all the consultancy work that I'm doing in that space, just could not get back to the podcast again. So yes, couldn't get it off the ground. I guess the moral of the story is that don't lose your streak.
But doing a podcast every week was quite a heavy load to fit into your other responsibilities. You have to practice what you preach and have some work-life balance.
True, but not so true. If you want something done, find a busy person and they will somehow make time. And actually, I'm so tempted to say something controversial about work-life balance, but I'm trying to show restraint as it is a World Suicide Prevention Day special after all.
Oh, you can't do that. Now I'm intrigued. You must share what's on your mind.
Well, I might get lynched while saying this, but I do have an issue with the way the concept of work-life balance is banded around nowadays.
What do you mean?
Well, it's the juxtaposition of work against life that I don't quite like. You know, as if life begins after work. So work has to be powered through so that you can get to the other side and then you can begin your living. There are many things that make life worth living, whether that be close relationships, leisure activities, and work or study too. They all contribute to making life rich, full, and meaningful. You know, I often say that about work, when you think of work as a chore, I don't feel I've ever been to work because I enjoy what I do. I agree with the importance of balance in life, but I do not like the way work and life are pitched as if they are two contrasting things. My home life is important, and so is my work life. Both contribute to the sense of who I am as a person.
I get the point you are making, but on your deathbed, will you be thinking, I could have spent a little bit more time at work?
Ah, that old cliche. You know what? On my deathbed, I doubt I'll be thinking much at all. But if I had some of my cognitive abilities left, I'll be thinking about my life and my legacy, which will cover both home and work. I've been blessed with loving relationships at home and people who are very meaningful to me. But it is the same at work. I'm surrounded by people that care about me and I care about them. Home or work, it's the power of human connection that brings joy to life. I guess that's what I'd be thinking about.
That is true, but we have gone off on a tangent.
Not quite. I think what we have been discussing is quite pertinent to healing for healers and energy in the long run and maintaining resilience amidst adversity.
Before you dive into that, I did want to ask you about your trip to India. This was the first trip back after COVID?
Yes, it was. And having lost some key people in our extended family, it was bittersweet. But it's always nice to see your family. I also managed to get away into the mountains, as I generally do, deep into the Himalayas. This time I went to Leh Ladakh. It's absolutely magical.
And you have been doing the drone videos on YouTube instead of the podcast?
Guilty as charged. Those videos did take up a lot of my time, I guess, eating into the podcasting time, I guess. But you know what? Leh Ladakh was, as I said, absolutely magical. And if you want to calm your nerves, go and watch those drone videos I've done on YouTube.
You've traveled a lot through the Himalayas. Was this very different?
Yes, it definitely was. I've trekked and traveled all the way from eastern fringes to the northwestern. You know, like the last time, I think this was just before COVID. In 2020, I went to the eastern side, Darjeeling. I've done a lot of trekking in my med school days. You know, so I've trekked across the breadth of the Himalayas. But Leh Ladakh, I've never seen anything like this. The landscapes, the high mountain passes, the roads, the lakes. You know, they're actual sand dunes, high altitude sand dunes, and you've got streams running through these sand dunes. The famous moonscapes of Ladakh, the peace of the monasteries, and also the turmoil of war captured in the war memorials, because I went up to Kargil in the Dras sector where the Indo-Pak conflict of 1997 happened, the Kargil War. Leh Ladakh absolutely has it all.
And then you came back to Kolkata for Durga Puja or the Autumn Festival?
Yes, I had not visited Kolkata during Durga Puja since 2006. And over this time, your memory begins to fade about what a showcase of humanity this festival is. It celebrates the victory of good over evil and female power, you know, all power being in the mother goddess, Goddess Durga. And the whole of East India descends into this sense of creative chaos and madness for the week of the festival and also in the lead up to it as well.
It sustains an entire economy though, doesn't it?
Yes, it definitely does. Life in Bengal rotates around this autumn festival, Durga Puja. It is difficult to capture in words what it actually is. The lights, the sounds, the smells, it's not for the faint-hearted. You know, India is an assault on the senses even in the best of times. But during Durga Puja, it reaches a crescendo. The creativity of the pandals, the beauty of the idols, the craftsmanship literally blows your mind, perhaps only second to the energy of the people, the throngs of crowds on the street going from one pandal to another. The throbbing pulse that runs through Kolkata and through all of Bengal during the festival is something you have to experience. It cannot be described. So for listeners, if you're making travel plans and if India is on your cards, then in the month of October, Kolkata or Calcutta, however you call it, is the place to be. This is an unashamed plug for my hometown, but believe me, you have never experienced anything like this unless you go and see the Autumn Festival or Durga Puja as it's locally known.
And in January, you did the driving holiday along the New South Wales coastline.
Yes, a very contrasting holiday, but that was wonderful too. From one lighthouse to another, so much history along the coast and such coastal beauty. So you see, I do have balance in my life too.
Okay, thanks for the dig. Not going to talk about work-life balance anymore, but professionally, what have you been doing?
You mean my drone videos are not professional?
I'm sure they are. I mean, in the sphere of suicide prevention.
Well, it's been an incredibly busy year for suicide prevention work. A lot of my headspace has been taken up by the prototype for the suicide prevention app, the Protect app. We haven't quite decided on the name that we will call it. It may be Safe Life Guide. I don't know, but we'll see. It's essentially an application on Android and iOS, which is coming together very nicely. It's part of our goal to reach 10 million people. I keep asking, what can I do today to create time tomorrow? And given everyone has a supercomputer in their palm, well, a smartphone, it seems like a natural next step to get the training and the tools of Protect out on smartphones and for people to benefit from the program. I'm sure we will talk more about it in the upcoming podcast, you know, expecting to launch it in early 2024. But yes, the Protect app, that's been taking up a lot of my headspace.
You've been doing lots of talks as well.
Yes, it's been relentless. So did the Suicide Prevention Summit in Australia, in the UK, and most recently, I think a couple of weeks back in the US. The US one, where we looked at risk versus recovery, had over 2,500 attendees. You know, it all chips away into that goal of 10 million people. So lots of talks in Western Australia, where I've got a lot of people, a lot of partners that I'm working with. I've been continuing the work with South Metro in Perth, where I'm doing specific consultancy work relating to leadership in suicide prevention, setting up suicide prevention pathways, working with safety and quality teams, looking at their the reviews of deaths by suicide. The translation of our work into Spanish is continuing. Work with Maudsley Learning in the UK is continuing. Also working in the suicide prevention space for schools in the Far East, doing a talk in Malaysia on World Suicide Prevention Day itself, so on the 10th. Upcoming talks for GPs in Australia and general hospital staff as well. So yes, I might not have done the podcast, but believe me, I've been talking endlessly.
Yes, I have heard your colleagues say that you can talk to a wall.
Well, this comes from a team building exercise, and we were doing star signs, and my star sign is Gemini. And the profile said, I can talk to a wall, you know, a Gemini can talk to a wall. And then that has become proof of the fact that all star signs, you know, that star signs are a real thing.
They are a real thing.
Well, it's a thing, all right. Don't know whether it's a real thing or not.
We are in a real danger of digressing again. Tell us about Healing for Healers.
Okay, so it's a booklet that brings together four key messages or principles, you know, four principles to construct a conversation when supporting a colleague who has lost a patient to suicide. And it also provides four key practices to maintain energy in the long run.
It is an actual booklet?
Yes, it's 24 pages, so not too long. I initially intended it to be only 12 pages, but you know, I kind of write the way I talk, so I've always got a lot to say, so it's filled up 24 pages. But there's a lot of imagery in there as well, which when you see the booklet, you will understand. So it's not all dense written material. It's available digitally to the organizations that I'm working with as well.
What's the inspiration for Healing for Healers?
Well, I lost a loved one to suicide very early in my psychiatric training. You know, within 12 hours of having spent a significant chunk of time, it was almost a couple of hours, you know, doing general chit-chat about life and living, philosophy, politics, all sorts. My loved one took their life by suicide in the early hours of the morning. So it was within a 12-hour window. That has been a very heavy burden to carry all these years. So in my stronger moments, I know that the eyes can't see if you are not looking for something. In my weaker moments, even though, as I said, it's been over two decades, it fills me with self-doubt that I should have done better. I should have seen it. Although I was not looking for suicidality and we were just spinning the yarn, and my loved one never had any mental health issues either. So part of Healing for Healers is made up of messages that I share with myself when I'm gripped with self-doubt. The other part is messages that I've shared with others in the last two decades of my leadership practice.
It must be an incredibly sensitive conversation to have with a colleague when they have lost someone to suicide and are stuck in an abyss of self-doubt.
Yes, an incredibly sensitive conversation. And I've made so many mistakes, you know. I might even say that Healing for Healers is a document that brings together the learnings from the mistakes I have made in two decades of my leadership practice.
You mean in the conversations with colleagues?
Yes, in the messages I've shared. You know, you lean one way and you can come across as patronizing. You lean another way, you can come across as insensitive. You lean another way and the person may pick up underlying tones of blame in what you're saying, even if none is intentioned. You know, given practitioners are quite conscientious and are already hurting at that time, it is so easy for a well-meaning message of support to be misconstrued. And believe me, I've got plenty of mistakes in my history.
I'm curious, what kind of mistakes?
Well, the most common one that I made and still do from time to time is, you know, as a psychiatrist myself, I have this intense desire to decrease a person's emotional pain. So I jump in and start giving solutions. You know, I open my trap and start talking when all that I need to do is to listen and be present.
I'm sure that is hard. You do want to make someone feel better. That is quite natural.
Yes, you do. But in that moment, there's very little that you can do to make it better. You know, what makes it better is connection. If you have lost a patient to suicide, you have been there where your colleague is today. And you need to reconnect with what you might have felt when it happened to you. And then just be present and share that space with your colleague. This is hard because we are talking about reconnecting with a moment of extreme vulnerability and emotional exposure for yourself. But that's what you need to do to be present, to be truly present. Without saying, I have been there, you need to convey, I have been there.
That sounds like an extremely nuanced skill.
It is, and there is no training out there for consultants, for nursing leaders, for allied health leaders, you know, people in leadership positions who have to support colleagues in this situation that often people end up in. You know, doctors and nurses usually put on their Mr. Fix-It cap and try to fix the situation. What they tend to do is start asking questions about what happened and then what happened after that and what happened after that. So they're being curious about the patient's presentation and what the colleagues did, and they try to make their colleague feel better and say things like, look, you did everything that you could do. There's nothing more that you could have done.
Surely colleagues like to feel reassured that they did everything they could. What is wrong with that?
No, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that, but you know, you have to understand that your colleague is hurting because a person's life that they have been involved in is lost. At that point in time, they just wish that they could have wrapped up that person in cotton wool and maybe just have admitted them into hospital. You know, there may be a small part of them, which is about self-preservation and what does this mean for me? But mostly, they're just hurting, full stop, they're hurting. And bringing up, oh, you did this, oh, you did that, and you did document everything, didn't you? And then saying, look, you're safe, nothing's going to happen to you. That does not do anything about their desire to curl up and cry because they are a conscientious human being who wishes they can just turn time back and have done everything differently. So that's a nice segue to the second point, which is because they want to turn time back, does not matter how appropriate their actions were. Going through what you did and didn't do makes them feel or they find things that they believe that they should have done or shouldn't have done. You know, when you start exploring as if you are taking a history or a sequence of decisions that you have made, the colleague will inevitably find stuff which now, with the benefit of hindsight, which we all know how wonderful it is, they wished that they had done this differently or that differently.
So Healing for Healers is a booklet that provides people working in mental health with the key messages to provide colleagues after they have lost a patient to suicide.
Yes, so key messages are principles and key practices. So it's the foundation for a training program in which we get professionals to practice these conversations with colleagues. So we've learned from Seven Safe Steps program that there is nothing like scenario-based learning, actually practicing the conversations within the psychological safety of supportive colleagues and not in kind of a real place where you're making mistakes and then that does avoidable harm to someone. So you do that practice and then you have case-based discussions and then you reflect on what worked well in the conversation and even better if. And that's a great way for learning. These are critical skills for people in leadership positions, but also for those who are not in a formal leadership role. Remember, there are only two groups of professionals in mental health, those who have lost a patient to suicide and those who are going to lose someone. It is a very morbid message, but a reality of the work we do. So Healing for Healers as a training program is important for your own resilience. The messages you will give to colleagues apply to you too, and you need to believe them first and practice what you preach. If I can find the time to kind of pull these messages together in kind of upcoming podcasts, I'll try and cover these messages one after another. It's called Heal Your Soul. HEAL is an acronym, and there are four messages in HEAL, H-E-A-L, each one of them. And I've just mentioned one of them, hindsight bias, and that hindsight hurts being one of them. But I'll go through these messages in a sequential way in later podcasts if we can manage to find the time to do the podcasts, actually.
How might listeners access the training?
Well, the easiest way will be to connect with me on LinkedIn. You know, just put my name in, Manan Kar Ray, in LinkedIn, and you will be able to find me. Send me a connection request, and we can have a discussion online as to the needs of the organization and how the needs may be met. You can always drop a line to admin@progress.guide. I'll put up the information relating to the training on the website as well, which you know is www.progress.guide. So you'll find more information about the Healing for Healers program over there as well.
How long does the training last?
Well, this is based on the needs on how interactive the commissioning organization wants it to be, whether we do it online or whether we do it face-to-face. So from 90-minute webinars to half-day and full-day workshops are all possible with the content that we have got. The more time we have, the more interactive we can make it. So this is at the heart of setting up an environment of restorative just culture, because when SAC1 investigations happen, people often look at the proximal human, the last person to have made a decision. The reality is that there are lots of things that are happening distally which had influenced the person to make that decision. Remember, everyone comes to work to do a good job. No one comes to work to do a bad job, right? So if we are to create that environment of psychological safety through restorative just culture, you have to practice in a recovery-oriented way where you take positive risks, and the environment and the organization needs to support that. So this kind of training is really, really important, because when things go wrong, your leaders should be able to speak to those people who have been involved and create their sense of self-belief so that they can continue to embrace positive risk. Without risk, there is no recovery. So this training helps to not just to enhance resilience in the people who need to heal, but also helps create that environment of restorative just culture, because these are the critical conversations, the key conversations which support that environment.
How can people access the booklet?
Oh, just get in touch. You know, as I said, get in touch with me on LinkedIn or email me through admin@progress.guide. And if you're interested, I'll kind of send you a digital copy of the booklet.
I did want to ask you about the imagery in the booklet.
The pinnacles of Namburg National Park in Western Australia.
Yes, they are beautiful.
Oh my God, aren't they just? Well, thank you for mentioning that. Yes, it all came together very nicely. I was in Perth for the Royal College conference, and I arrived a day early. I think I arrived on the Saturday. And because of the time difference of 2 hours with Brisbane, my sleep was all over the place. Well, I'm not a great sleeper anyway. So I woke up at 2 a.m. and did not know what to do with myself. So I decided to jump in my car. I'd got a rental car. And I decided to drive north for a couple of hours to the pinnacles. It was on my bucket list.
Jump in the car and drive for 2 hours, as you do at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Yes, as you do at 2 a.m. in the morning. But I'm really, really glad I did. You know, driving up there after I left Perth, I think all along the way, I was not crossed by a single car driving in the other direction. It was completely desolate. And I almost hit a kangaroo. I'll never forget that. You know, they use that phrase, deer in headlights. For me, it's a kangaroo in the headlights. It's etched in my brain. It just jumped up and just stood there on the road. And like I hit the brakes, narrowly escaped kind of hitting the kangaroo. Anyway, when I reached Namburg, it was about 4 a.m. And I turned the headlights off. It was pitch dark. So I closed my eyes for a bit, let my eyes adjust. And then I opened the eyes and you see these beautiful pinnacles under the starlight. It's one of the most amazing experiences I've had. It's comparable to, you know, those moments, you know, those little pearls in your life, like seeing the sunset over the Grand Canyon, or more recently, seeing sunrise over Pangong So in the high Himalayas of Ladakh. You know, the beauty of the pinnacles absolutely blew my mind. You know, under starlight, there was a mystique, and that mystique gradually evaporated as the sun rose into this glittering desert landscape punctuated by these pinnacles. It's beautiful.
If you're wondering what the pinnacles are, they are part of the natural landscape of the desert of Nambung, 2 hours north of Perth. They were formed 25,000 to 30,000 years ago, after the sea receded and left deposits of seashells. Coastal winds removed the surrounding sand, leaving the limestone pillars exposed to the elements' erosion.
Yeah, that's right. So shaped by nature's forces and standing the test of time, the pinnacles, in my mind, symbolize resilience amidst adversity. It was the perfect imagery. You know, I've been dreaming of this, you know, and it all fell together into this. When you see the document Healing for Healers, you'll know what I mean.
And there are some beautiful creation stories as well.
Yes, the traditional custodians, the Noongar people, have a spiritual connection to these lands. Their story is of those young men who had wandered into the desert, which was sacred and reserved for women. They were buried alive by the gods as punishment and left behind as these limestone figures. Now, we chose the pinnacles as they reminded us of lasting inner strength and how time and tides erosion, i.e. adversity, shapes our beautiful minds and who we are as people.
That is a wonderful message to end our World Suicide Prevention Day 2023 special. You are all healers, and when adversity strikes, it is important for you to take time to heal. You cannot pour from an empty cup. Time to refill. Get in touch through LinkedIn or by emailing admin@progress.guide if you want the digital booklet. Any last messages from you, Manon?
I think you said it beautifully. Can't pour from an empty cup. Take time to refill. I've actually got a close work colleague who keeps saying this all the time. Support another colleague to refill their cup too. This World Suicide Prevention Day, make a commitment to gain the skills in these sensitive conversations. They will serve you well in your journey as a mental health professional. And when the time comes, and believe me, unfortunately it will, you will be able to draw on them to support your colleagues. Healing for Healers is a program about self-compassion. As the caption on the back of the cover of the document says, two together, self-compassion forges kindness for others. Like the pinnacles, you remind us of lasting inner strength and how time and tides erosion, i.e. adversity, may be overcome, and the learning that takes place in the process of overcoming could shape your beautiful minds, your kind and compassionate hearts, and who you are as human beings, who you are as people. On World Suicide Prevention Day, make time and take time to look after yourself, because as a healer, you are a gift to the world. And if you are hurting, you too need to heal before you can heal others again. Thank you very much for joining us today.